couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's Big Fat Show features Maleficent, A Million Ways to Die in the West, and Filth. These are the movies I'm going to be reviewing this week. Smaller group. We actually sometimes get a breathing room. And in the process of that breathing room, I'm going to be talking about some of the movies that I'm excited for summer. And yeah, I know summer started already. According to Hollywood, it started in May. But school's out this week, so I think it's worthwhile talking summer movies now. I'm also going to be talking about some news in the trailer park, and there's going to be box office predictions and DVD roundup. So let's get started here. Before we can do anything else, I got to tell you how to get a hold of me. If you want to reach me via email, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can hit me up on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
All right, Ron Burgundy, let's move into the news. I'm not going to talk about anything depressing. I know there's been some stuff out there for national tragedy news stories. I don't really want to get into that. I want to get into the more of the hard movie news and leave the punditry to others. So let's talk about breasts. First of all, Eva Green's Sin City poster has been banned. Not really, but it's been banned by the MPAA. And what's funny is when you read this story that originally appeared, and it said the Weinstein Company was unavailable for comment, yet guess who sent me the notice? I got a press release from the Weinstein Company. So obviously weren't unavailable for comment. They were just waiting for this to happen and then decided to disseminate the press release. Here's the thing. What it is every time they make a movie, they do character posters. And in Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, which comes out in August, they have the various characters, and Eva Green, who is, of course, the busty woman from 300 Rides of an Empire and The Dreamers and Casino Royale, her character poster, she's basically wearing a very sheer see-through negligee, and you can pretty much see her breasts. Let's call a spade a spade. You can see her boobs, okay? And here's the thing. The MPAA has not banned it in the sense that the government bans books in, like, Nazi Germany. What the MPAA's ban on it means is they just don't approve it. They do not approve it. And that's a guideline that a lot of the theaters will use, whether or not they put the poster up in the movie house. So, like, if you go to the AMC theater, you're not going to see this poster. You can find it everywhere on the internet. And if you want to see better pictures of Eva Green's breasts, they're out there. Let me tell you, you just go rent The Dreamers. You pretty much see everything. This is not a government thing. This is just the MPAA saying, when parents are bringing their kids to see Planes, Fire, and Rescue this summer, they probably don't want to walk past Eva Green's nipples. Now, I do. I'm a huge fan of Eva Green's breasts. But I understand why the MPAA is doing that. And this just reeks of desperation from Harvey Weinstein, because he's always looking for some sort of ratings controversy. And everyone's like, and I've heard people say, well, you know, he takes these small movies that otherwise don't have big studio backing. He is a big studio. The Weinstein Company is a big studio. It has clout in Hollywood. So don't give me that nonsense that you need a Robert Rodriguez movie by the Weinstein Companies. It's having trouble getting marketed. That's ridiculous. I think what happened is the MPAA is happy to give the movie an R rating without any balking. And he's like, where am I going to get the controversy? So he goes for this poster. Most of the people I see freaking out about this are people I know that are, you know, movie buffs and single guys who don't have kids. And here's the point. I get it that you don't care. And it's really not all that racy anyways to your standards. But just as you don't want people imposing their morality on you, you can't impose your morality on them. This is for general display in AMC theaters or whatever. And I understand. I get it. As a parent, you don't necessarily want to have to deal with that. And AMC, that's why AMC bows to the MPAA so much, because they are a general movie house. You can see this poster probably at more alternative art house theaters and places that will show, for example, NC-17 movies if they're released. Ultimately, the MPAA, and I've said this before, the MPAA is far from perfect, but they're an internal regulation agency that is far better than the Hays Code was when it was abolished in the 60s or 70s. And you don't want that again, But if you don't have that internal regulation, you know who's going to step in? The government. And who wants the government telling you what movies you can and can't see or what posters you can or cannot exhibit? Let it be internal, and you can do the poster. It's just not an approved poster by the MPAA. It's Harvey Weinstein trying to drum up business. The next piece of news, which is that was just more the risque, you know, sensationalism. A couple news points to hit. Community may show up again on Hulu, and shows have jumped networks, like Cougar Town had gone from ABC to TBS. And more importantly, in terms of the Hulu connection, you had Arrested Development show up again with new seasons on Netflix. And that's cool. I'm still not going to get Hulu because Hulu embeds ads in everything. And that's annoying. I'm sorry. If I want to watch some, I'll pay a premium to not watch ads, but I'm not paying for Hulu Plus to watch Community and then get ads for Community. I'll wait for the DVDs, but it'd be nice to see it come back. I don't know if it's going to be that good. Edgar Wright has stepped out of directing Ant-Man. Now this is a huge deal, and it threw the internet into a tizzy last weekend because this was a big news and a lot of geeks love Edgar Wright. I like Edgar Wright too. And he was going to do Ant-Man with Paul Rudd, and now he's not. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that and a more in-depth analysis of what happened behind the scenes in a later segment of the show. The final piece of news is Hateful Eight is back on with Quentin Tarantino directing. Apparently, this guy can't decide what the heck he's doing with his future. I don't know. I mean, I'm not all that excited for Hateful Eight simply because when he releases a movie, let him release a movie and I'll enjoy it. But all the little hand-wringing and whining and, you know, acting like a little girl on the schoolyard as he did when the Hateful Eight script was leaked, I have no patience for with Quentin Tarantino. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That music means we are moving into the trailer park. There are two that I want to highlight. There's been a whole bunch of trailers that have been coming out, but I want to hit these two. They're a little bit lesser known movies, I guess. One is Earth to Echo. It opens on July 2nd, and it is from Relativity, a sci-fi movie with kids. So let's hear the trailer.
These are my best friends. We were normal kids.
A couple of seconds ago, our phones went crazy.
Whoa!
You see that?
Dude, it's a map.
I want to go.
Whoa, what is that? 20 questions with an alien.
One beep is yes, two beeps are no. Are you from space?
Do you eat humans?
What you can't hear in the trailer is this is a found footage movie. At least apparently that's what the trailer looks like. And that just kills me. Because it looks like a sweet little cool little movie. It looks like an E.T., something along the lines of E.T. or The Last Mimsy, these sort of fantastical stories with kids and dreams and fascination, but then they're going to go and make it shot on cell phones, which is going to kill the movie, in my opinion. And that's, I think, if anything that this movie doesn't do well, it's going to be because it's marred in found footage. That opens on July 2nd. The next movie I want to talk about is Magic in the Moonlight. This is Woody Allen's latest film, opening on July 25th.
I need your help.
The plot thickens.
The Catledge family are socialites in the south of France. There's a woman who has them believing she's a spirit medium. You are the greatest debunker of fake spiritualists.
She won't fool me.
You are a very clever little humbug.
I think you'll trick me into showing you how I deceive people.
Stanley doesn't believe in spiritualists. He thinks you're all scoundrels.
Every year, Woody Allen comes out with a movie, and, you know, some are good, some are bad, some are lavish, some are relatively self-contained. You know, something like Blue Jasmine last year was very intimate, small movie. And he's done movies that are very lavish, like Midnight in Paris was very lavish. I mean, it's still Woody Allen, but it had that sort of dream fantasy element to it. And I've never been a huge Woody Allen fan. I think some of his movies look interesting. This one feels a little bit more story-driven, because so many of his movies tend to be this character-driven, this character study, and which is what Blue Jasmine was. Even Midnight in Paris was like that. This looks like it's maybe going back to something like Curse of the Jade Scorpion, which did not do well, and the people involved in it weren't very thrilled with either. But I liked it, so I'm kind of looking forward to this one. This one looks like it actually has a story to it, more than just this deep character study or just watching somebody, you know, will have their life be ruined because of their own annoyances. Magic in the Moonlight opens on July 25th. That's it for this segment. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about my most anticipated summer movies and a review of Filth. Not the substance, the movie. Because we can't go! Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies coming back at you. And instead of doing a review for the first part of this segment, I'm going to be talking about summer movies, the ones that I am most anticipating. I know there's other people that are anticipating things, nonsense like the Transformers films. That's not on my list. Spoiler alert. I think those movies could be so much better if they actually had a competent story director. You know, actually, speaking of Transformers, the one thing I think that they should do, Michael Bay should pair up with another director and say, you know what, Michael Bay, you just do the action and have some other director direct the characters in the story. And I think you'd have one heck of a movie if you did that. If you said, okay, action sequence is starting, that's when Michael Bay takes over. And because he does great action, but have him put characters in interaction and coherent dialogue together. I mean, his movies sound like a beer commercial that's been extended to 2.5 hours because the guy can't make a short movie. But I'm not talking about that. And like I said, the summer movie season starts with Hollywood on the first weekend of May. And it's been that way for about 10 years. When I was a kid, it started on Memorial Day weekend. And that was always the first summer movie opening. Now, I have children and they're just getting out of school. And they actually go one extra day because there are so many snow days. But most people are either out of school last week or they're having the last day of school this week. To me, this is the summer movie season. This is when kids are off of school. Kids can go see movies during the day. And it opens up the entire week to audiences rather than just the weekends. Because I spent a lot of time in the theaters as a kid, but I spent a lot of times like on a Tuesday. I'd go with friends and we'd go see one or two or three movies sometimes in a row and then walk over and get lunch at the mall shopping center or whatever. So this to me is what I'm looking for. This is the summer movie season coming up, starting in June. The first one is Edge of Tomorrow. That actually comes out next week. So we'll have a review next week. And I know it's based on this graphic novel series called All You Need Is Kill. And there are people that are refusing to call it Edge of Tomorrow. And I'm like, well, grow up. This is a more marketable title for a wide motion picture. I think this looks cool. It's the first Doug Liman movie since Jumper, which wasn't a great film, but I enjoyed to a degree. And I'm looking forward to that one. The other one I'm looking forward to is Deliver Us from Evil, which is opens later this summer. This one is a horror film, and it stars Eric Bana as a guy who is dealing with a possible entity with his daughter. This opens on 4th of July weekend, along with Earth to Echo and Tammy. These are the worst 4th of July openings, I think. But Deliver Us from Evil is the one I'm looking forward to. Also, in July is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is a huge anticipated film for me, opening July 11th. I love the Planet of the Apes series. I love the prequel, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So I'm looking forward to see what happens with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And then the next week, July 18th, I am looking forward to Jupiter Ascending. Not a whole lot of people are looking forward to this. Not a whole lot of people are aware this movie is actually happening. This is the Wachowskis' latest film, and I'm a huge Wachowski fan. There's some movies of theirs I haven't been a huge fan, like Speed Racer. There's a lot to love about Speed Racer, but it just goes on way too long. If you could cut an edit of Speed Racer down to 90 minutes, it probably would have been the best movie of 2008, I think is when it came out. But they didn't. The Wachowskis tend to over-embellish a bit. But I loved Cloud Atlas. I thought that was a brilliant movie, and I love the Matrix movies, all three of them. I don't care. I think that the Wachowskis are fantastic visionaries in science fiction, and I think they have a real handle on speculative fiction and hard science fiction. I'm really looking forward to Jupiter Ascending. I don't care that Channing Tatum's in it. I don't care that the guy can't act his way in a serious movie out of the paper bag. He's great in comedies. But don't ask Channing Tatum to emote, because it's kind of a disaster. Still, Jupiter Ascending looks really cool to me. So that opens on July 18th. The next one, of course, is Guardians of the Galaxy. We talked a little bit about that last week and whether or not it's going to be a hit and what it needs to do to be a hit. I'm really excited to see this. I just saw a 3D trailer in IMAX for this one. I saw Maleficent. Looks amazing. And I just hope that it's accessible to the mainstream audience. I think it might be. It's got a talking raccoon in it. Who doesn't like talking raccoons and trees? Why not? And finally, the last movie, which is in August, it's opening on a Wednesday, it's August 13th, not August 15th, is Let's Be Cops, which when I first heard about it, I was terrified of, because it sounded like a terrible idea for a movie, but it's got Jake Johnson, and I think, is it Damon Wayans Jr., who are in it? They're funny. I think they're very funny on New Girl, even though Damon Wayans Jr. is sort of shoehorned into the story once his TV show Happy Endings fell apart. But still, I think Let's Be Cops could be extremely funny. It could be the breakout comedy of August. I mean, it's not going to be the breakout comedy yet because you already had Neighbors. All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next up, we're going to be talking about Filth, which is written and directed by the guy who wrote Trainspotting. In Filth, a corrupt Scottish detective played by James McAvoy is trying to get a major promotion and is put in charge of a murder investigation he can't seem to distance himself from.
Scotland, we're such a uniquely successful race. This nation brought the world television, whiskey, and of course, me. Detective Sergeant Bruce Robertson. The games are always being played. You just have to be the best, and I usually am.
What made you join the force, Bruce?
Police oppression, brother.
And you wanted to stamp it out from the inside?
No, I wanted to be a part of it.
There's parts of Filth that remind me a lot of Trainspotting. Obviously, the Scottish location, the really heavy Scottish accents, which is very hard to discern sometimes for, you know, big, fat Americans like myself. When I love Trainspotting. I think Trainspotting is a fantastic 5-star great movie Danny Boyle did. But it's very hard to watch without having it on DVD where you can turn on the subtitles because you can't understand a doggone word some of these people say. And that's kind of the same way with Filth. It was really hard to follow at times simply because the accents were so thick. Now, if you're Scottish, not a big deal. Or if you're used to dealing with Scots, or if you're even from the UK, you probably can discern the Scottish accent a little bit better. But that was my biggest obstacle I had in the movie. As for a movie, it's okay. It's not great. In a way, it reminds me a little bit of Dom Hemingway, where it was just really, really trying to be edgy and crazy. And at times, it seems to try too hard. If you compare it to Trainspotting, which is, of course, by a different director, but when you compare it to Trainspotting was hip and powerful and strong, and it had this pacing. And it had this surreal nature to it, but it seemed very effortless. I mean, I'm sure it was not an easy movie to do, but that's the genius of Danny Boyle. He made this thing seem almost, you know, almost a breeze to make. And Filth struggles a little bit more. It has an interesting story to it. It has interesting characters. It's always a challenge to have the main character of your movie, the protagonist, be this gray character who's really a horrible person. And you get hints that there's something deeper with him. And there is more to his character. But it takes so long to get there. And he's such an awful person. I mean, hence the purpose of the movie. But it's really hard to get past some of that and really like the guy. And to get on his side, it's very hard to come around and become part of his team. And even when things are revealed, it's still hard to come around and be part of his team. He's such a horrible person. You can have a horrible person as a character and they can be lovable and funny and endearing. Or they can be a horrible person, but really they have a good side. And be an anti-hero like Riddick in those movies. But you can't have a person who's a horrible character, who's doing horrible things, and then say, oh, well, he's just has this problem in the past, but really this is all because he's a horrible person. Ultimately, it was okay. It was interesting. It was different. But I still got to say, Filth kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. All right, we got to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Maleficent and A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah.
Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys in the Movies, coming back at you. We are now in the movie review segments. Let's talk about the big movies that are opening this week. The first one is Maleficent, starring Angelina Jolie. And this is an alternate take on the Sleeping Beauty animated film in which the villain Maleficent is betrayed by the human king, seeks revenge against him, and finds redemption.
Curious little beastie. Bring her to me.
I know you're there. Don't be afraid.
I am not afraid.
Then come out.
Then you'll be afraid.
All the other fairies fly. Why don't you?
I had wings once,
They were strong, but they were stolen from me. There is evil in this world.
These movies have been very popular to do lately, taking, you know, sort of a kid's story or a classic cartoon or a classic kid's film and making a modern, not a grown-up version of it, but a more mainstream version of it. And we saw this with Alice in Wonderland. So there was a sequel. So Alice in Wonderland was a big hit for Disney. Oz the Great and Powerful was last year. That was another hit for Disney. But they also had stuff like Jack the Giant Slayer, which was awful. Snow White and the Huntsman is another example of sort of an alternate version of a classic fairy tale. And at the same time, you had Mirror Mirror, which both of those movies were kind of stupid. Sorry. I'm sorry. Was that dismissive? Excuse me. This one it's Disney playing once again in its own backyard. There was no rights issues that they had with Oz the Great and Powerful. It's sort of like Alice in Wonderland, where they have all the rights and they can do whatever they want to and really make it mirror the original animated film. Now, first, full disclosure here, Sleeping Beauty is actually my favorite classic Disney movie. I mean, there's a lot of them out there. I mean, I love Dumbo, too. Dumbo is such a great movie. But in terms of that early generation of Walt Disney films, kind of pre-1960s, the stuff that was made, I guess, you know, when like 101 Dalmatians, those were sort of a different era, that sort of rustic, more hand-drawn, pencil sketch type stuff. You know, you had that with Jungle Book and Robin Hood. But this range of movies, especially the classic princess stuff, this is my favorite. I love Sleeping Beauty. I think it's a fantastic film, and it's great for all ages and both boys and girls. So they are treading a little bit on sacred ground for myself just because I love that movie so much. I mean, Snow White, I'm like, I can kind of take or leave. I there's elements of Snow White I love, but Sleeping Beauty, there's something special there. They're going the Wicked approach, where they're saying, okay, we're taking the point of view from the bad guy and sort of, oh, this is the untold story. And Angelina Jolie, as the title character, she's good. I mean, she does a great job. And I'll say what you want to about Angelina Jolie with some wackiness that you see in the news. The lady can act. And she commits to this. And she commits in a much more realistic way than, like, say, Charlize Theron when she was the evil queen in Snow White and the Huntsman. I mean, she was just so overtly, overly serious. There's a warmth to Angelina Jolie in this movie. And so even though she does chew the scenery a bit with some of the lines she's given and some of the performances, she still is really quite fantastic in this movie. And the look is great. I mean, her look, she looks very much like Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty. And the animation is good. I mean, there's a lot of Uncanny Valley happening with the human-ish type characters, like the three good fairies, who are terrible, by the way. The three good fairies are the worst part of this movie. And they were one of the most charming things about the original movie. I think they go for the slapstick, so that, you know, the little blue, green, and pink fairies that raise Aurora. They're terrible, and I think they're trying to make them comedic, but the women they got to play them don't do it well. They're just shrill and annoying. And you can tell that because when you watch the movie, they just disappear halfway through the film. And they're gone for a good chunk of it. And I think there's probably oodles of footage lying around the vault of Disney, other outtakes of what they've done that is not very appealing and just never made it in the cut. This was a big error on the part of the filmmakers. So when Angelina Jolie's there, she's great. Elle Fanning as Sleeping Beauty, she's a beautiful girl and she's a pretty good actress in her own right, but they kind of just cast her as the grinning idiot in this one. She just giggles and smiles through a lot of the film. And that's not her fault of the actor. It's just the writing. She's not given much good material. And Angelina Jolie's not given the greatest material either, but she really does some stuff with it. Then there's Charlton Copley as the king, and he's very dark. I mean, when Angelina Jolie's not there and you just have the king, it becomes Snow White and the Huntsman. Is the best way to describe it. And when the three fairies are there, it becomes Mirror Mirror. When Angelina Jolie's there doing the Maleficent stuff, it suddenly becomes a good movie. So I'm really conflicted with this one. I struggle with this because I love the source material so well, and there's parts of it that really are fantastic. And it looks fantastic in 3D on the IMAX screen. So if you have a chance to see it that way, it's worth checking out. I'm going to just say it just kind of rocks, just kind of barely, just because I think that there's enough there to like. But I was ultimately disappointed with it. But it ultimately kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film we're going to be talking about is A Million Ways to Die in the West. In his follow-up to Ted, Seth MacFarlane plays a cowardly sheep herder in 1882 Arizona who falls in love with a gunslinger's wife.
The American West is a terrible place in time. Everything out here that's not you wants to kill you. Angry drunk people, hungry animals, outlaws. Oh, the doctor!
I couldn't save her.
She had a splinter. Doc, what were you supposed to do?
I would like to welcome a new member to our community.
Welcome to our awesome town.
What's with this fair?
Every year, people die.
Really?
Everybody hold still.
People die at the fair.
People die at the fair.
First of all, I am a big fan of Family Guy. I'm a big fan of American Dad. Not so much the Cleveland Show. I'm also loved Ted. I thought Ted was a very fun movie. I really enjoyed Ted. And that is a bad way to come into A Million Ways to Die in the West, because you're coming at it with a lot of good stuff that Seth MacFarlane's done. And this is not his strongest piece. And a lot of people will say, well, it's because he cast himself in the main character. Well, he cast himself as Ted. I mean, he was the voice of Ted. So I don't think it's any sort of vanity issue. I just don't think this is a terribly well-written movie. The trailer is very funny. And sometimes when you have an R-rated movie like this, it's very R-rated. It has a lot of language and a lot of sex jokes. It's very hard to cut a trailer because the funniest jokes have swearing or really blue humor to them. That's actually not the case in this movie. Superbad was like that. The trailer for Superbad's terrible, but the movie's hilarious because the best parts are riddled with stuff you can't put in a trailer. This movie has some very funny moments, and the funniest moments end up in the trailer because they just happen to not be swearing during them. And then there's more swearing in the movie. It reminds me a little bit of The Heat, where The Heat had jokes that ended up in the trailer that played decently or funny, and then when you saw them in the movie, they don't play as well because they decided to throw in an F-bomb just to make it more R-rated. So, A Million Ways to Die in the West has the feel of a giant two-hour non-sequitur cutaway of Family Guy, but they don't actually use the non-sequitur cutaways. In my mind's eye, I can picture Seth MacFarlane with his buddy sitting around a table drinking beers one night saying, you know what? The West is romanticized hilariously on screen, but it was a terrible place to live. It was that you could die. There's a million things that could have killed you. And I could just see them just throwing out all these jokes. And they have scenes where you can tell they're just saying, well, we got to throw these jokes in. How are we going to do it? Well, we're just going to have them complain about the West. It just doesn't play as a movie. It's not a coherently constructed comedy, and it's not an absurdistly constructed comedy like, say, Blazing Saddles, which is work of genius. This movie has a story, but it keeps cutting away to comedy gags, not cutaways the way Family Guy works. So it maybe would work better as a stand-up sketch, maybe. There's some very funny things in it, and there's some stuff in there that you don't see in the trailers that are very funny, and the actors are good, and they own the roles. But actually, the biggest problem is it runs too long. There was a part to it when I'm like, oh, this is the climax, and I'm like, oh, no, this is the lead into the third act. Oh, no. And I look at my watch, and I'm like, if this movie was an hour and a half, kind of like Speed Racer, if this movie was an hour and a half, it probably would have been pretty good. But it just feels really bloated. It's almost 2 hours long. And that whole last 20 minutes just is a bit of a bear to get through. So while it has some laughs, A Million Ways to Die in the West kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
We got to go to the break. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking about box office and DVDs. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies coming in for the final segment of the show. Don't leave yet because we've still got some cool things to talk about, talking about the box office in this segment. Also going to do a little bit of an analysis of why X-Men's box office was good, even though it's been reported in a mixed way, and also why Blended failed so spectacularly. The box office this week, was I correct? I said $120 million for X-Men. I was close. It was $110.5 million. It was almost $111 million. which has widely been reported as, if you count X-Men 1, 2, The Last Stand, and then this technically kind of being the fourth X-Men movie, X-Men The Last Stand did a phenomenal opening weekend. And it at the still right now, it's the highest grossing domestic one. But its opening weekend was $102 million for its 3-day, but it ultimately for the 4-day was $123 million. This X-Men came in a little bit lower, and people are saying, well, is this a problem because it had a 3D bump? We have ticket price inflation. Here's why it's okay. And a lot of people have pointed out that Memorial Day movie releases tend to be very front-loaded, and they steam away pretty quickly. Here's why this is good for an X-Men movie. First of all, it's going to do well overseas. It's already over $300 million worldwide, and which basically means it's made its budget back, and then it's got to double that and then beyond that. So it's definitely going to be fine in terms of box office. But here's the difference. You can't compare this to The Last Stand exactly, because the face of movies have changed quite a bit in the last 8 years. Back in 2006, Memorial Day 2006, which is when the X-Men The Last Stand came out, there was no Marvel or DC competition at all at that time. In fact, the only other major superhero movie releasing that year was, like, a month later, Superman Returns, which was kind of a dud anyways. And yeah, you had Batman Begins happen the previous summer, but you really hadn't had anything since then. That previous summer was Batman Begins and Fantastic Four, and that was it. Oh yeah, you had V for Vendetta in November, but in terms of high-tier superhero movies, that's it. It was a very uncrowded marketplace. This year, you had Captain America Winter Soldier, you had Spider-Man, you've got Guardians of the Galaxy coming out later this summer. It's a very crowded slate, and there was plenty of offerings then. X-Men and Spider-Man were really the only quality superhero movies at that time. You hadn't had The Dark Knight. You hadn't had the Avengers movies. So there's a heck of a lot more competition. So $110 million for an opening weekend for a franchise that's 14 years old, that's pretty doggone good. The other difference is they're making pipeline movies now, which means they've got the other movie prepped and ready to go and ready to start shooting. X-Men Apocalypse already has a release date. It is coming in like 2 years. And they tease it in the post-credit sequence, whereas the post-credit sequences before were just little stingers. This one always, they tease the next movie. That is a good thing because people are now expecting the next movie and they're building franchises. Whereas X-Men The Last Stand only came out a couple years after X2. And it was back then when they were still making movies where they'd see how the movie does before they greenlight the next one. Now they greenlight movies before they release. While studios don't need the fanboy support, X-Men franchise has struck a balance between the fans with this movie and First Class and the mainstream audience, and that's good. That way you're not going to have a repeat of Iron Man 3 where the fans get upset at Iron Man 3 or Ben Affleck as Batman or Doctor Doom in the Fantastic Four movies. $110 million domestically for Memorial Day weekend is perfectly fine for X-Men, and we're going to be getting more of these movies. Box office prediction for this week, I think that Maleficent is going to make $55 million. It's not nearly at the level of Alice in Wonderland or even Oz the Great and Powerful. It's probably comparable to Snow White and the Huntsman. I think it's got a little bit of a challenge because it's very female-oriented, but it's not like a Twilight movie that, let's just say, pushes the right buttons on the female audience, which is why you got tons of women seeing Magic Mike and the Twilight movie. So it's a little bit more of a challenge, a little bit harder of a sell, but still, $55 million, that's going to be plenty for a Maleficent. I think it's going to do fine. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Two real quick talking points. One of them is, why did Blended fail so spectacularly? Because it did. It was a massive failure because it only made just under $18 million. For this weekend, when Adam Sandler's opening movies to $40 million or more in the summer. And it's not because he makes bad movies, because a lot of people make bad movies and still do well. And it's not because he has fans. Fans don't make a movie either. Your fan base is never enough to support a big summer movie. A fan base is enough to get Veronica Mars to raise $6 million on Kickstarter and make that movie. But you can't get $40 million just from a fan base. I don't even think he has fans. He's recently been a passive fan base audience. People would go see his movies because they were funny, but it's not like people were dying for the next Adam Sandler movie. They're like, oh, Adam Sandler's movies tend to be funny, even if they're terrible, and people go see him. But the problem is he got lazy, And he alienated any sort of fan base I think he had from those Billy Madison days. And at this point, now nobody cares. There's a saying in comedy, either people can hate you or they can love you. At least they're talking. And that's how people like Howard Stern was a great example of why he did well, because even the people that hated him listened. But there's other things. The trailer was mismarketed because it was aiming for the audience that would go see Grown Ups 2, but it was something different. And they didn't want to see a romantic comedy. They wanted to see Grown Ups 2 or Grown Ups 3. And I don't think anybody cares about Drew Barrymore anymore. I think she's good, but nobody cares. Nobody cares about this movie. And it's the same reason why Burt Reynolds stopped being a star. Stars just kind of fizzle out. I'll give you evidence as to why nobody cared about the movie, good or bad. My review went up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it got very little traffic. And that's not saying that I'm significant, because I'm not. But the point is, I liked the movie, and I gave it a positive review. And I said, oh, this will probably get me a lot of traffic, because it's getting terrible reviews from all the other critics. And contrarian reviews on something like this tend to do well. You get the people say, oh, who's the one guy who liked this? Boom, let's look at his review. And I don't write it for that reason, but if my opinion runs contrary to what everybody else seems to be saying, I tend to get more traffic from those reviews. I didn't get any traffic from this. So basically, for what would be a polarizing movie, a contrarian review should at least get some sort of awareness. Just nobody cared. Nobody cared either way. Just nobody cared. That's the bottom line. Nobody cared. Nobody cared about this movie. That is why it bombed. The next piece I want to talk about real quick is why did Edgar Wright leave Ant-Man? Now, there's been a bunch of rumors. Whenever things like this happen, you never get a straight answer from anybody. And even if there's interviews given, they never actually say, well, here's the memo I got from the higher-ups at Marvel, and they told me XYZ. No one's going to say that. They're always very gracious, and they're careful not to, you know, step on any toes or say anything too controversial that's going to get them in legal trouble. So you're never going to get a full answer to this. The only person who knows really why Edgar Wright left Ant-Man is Edgar Wright. But the rumors are that there were creative differences and rewrites. And ultimately, Marvel is treading new ground here. And I said this last week, Guardians of the Galaxy is a test. It's a template. It's seeing if this quirky, different type of movie will work, if it can work outside of the very, very, very mainstream version of Thor and Avengers and Iron Man. And they don't want to run two experiments at once. If Guardians of the Galaxy bombs hard, then they're going to say, no, we need to make the rest of our Marvel movies through 2028, which is how far they have them scheduled. We want to make them more like Iron Man. Guardians of the Galaxy is a chance to see if people will respond to something a little bit different and a little bit alternative. And I still think they have plenty of confidence in Guardians of the Galaxy, but they don't want to run two experiments at once. If Guardians of the Galaxy is a massive hit, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a headline somewhere in August that Edgar Wright will come back for Ant-Man. And Marvel will loosen its reins a little bit. But ultimately, this is a Marvel movie. They're building a brand. They've done a very good job building brands. And I'm sure that the people at Marvel have stepped in and said, you need to do this and you need to do that. And they're getting a little bit of resistance from Edgar Wright. And like Iron Man 2, they're probably insisting on putting in some Marvel Cinematic Universe elements that don't necessarily flow in Edgar Wright's vision. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Oh, here we go. This is time for the DVD roundup. All right, real quick, Spotlight. The one Blu-ray I want to highlight is this one. It's a double feature. There's a lot of double features. If you like most bang for your buck, you can get like double disc features or two movies on one disc. I recently got The Puppet Masters and Deep Rising on a double feature Blu-ray. These are terrible movies, science fiction films from the 90s. They're awful. But it was like $8 and it was Blu-ray. And they have no special features, but if all you want is the movie, you can find stuff. So if you ever want to go to Amazon and look for something, look for those deals. Look for those two-in-one packages, because you're going to find some great stuff. Other movies this week on DVD, there's really not a whole lot. There's Endless Love, which I didn't get a chance to see because I was on a cruise. There was Gambit, Cheap Thrills, Journey into the West. Those are all smaller films. You got Sleepaway Camp, got a Blu-ray release. The Life Aquatic got on the Criterion Collection. TV shows, you've got Suits Season 3, Covert Affairs Season 4. And The Universe, Ancient Mysteries Explained Season 7, which is kind of fun. History Channel saying how things actually may have happened with Stonehenge and the pyramids and that sort of thing. Stinker of the Week is Airplane vs. Tornado because it stars Dean Cain and Robin Givens. How could it possibly go right? Next week, we're going to be talking about Edge of Tomorrow, The Fault in Our Stars, Words and Pictures, Obvious Child, and The Sacrament. It's going to be a big week, so tune in. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.